So welcome, episode 115. It's Podcast Pell Droid. Leon's still eating his tea. The game finished only, what, about 45 minutes ago. Most of us probably still haven't come down off the scene. Rich, you called it, so I'm expecting a big kind of Italian puffed out chest performance now from you on this.
Yeah, well, it went really, really well, didn't it? And it was just, what a game of football. What a brilliant tournament game of football. I mean, looking back, kind of years from now, people will remember that performance 100%.
Yeah,
such a good game. So many good players, really, really doing their stuff. Bale and Ramsey were just brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Guys, you okay? Enjoy that.
Yeah, really, really good. I after the Switzerland game, I kind of reverted to my normal mindset of a healthy dose of pessimism approaching this match, and it worked. It's where I feel most comfortable, and that definitely helped usher in a much better performance, I think.
Revert to type, was it?
Yeah, I got far too carried away with the first game of a new tournament. And, you know, I need to start low and work up. I can't start high. It never goes well.
And Leon, you rushed back from the pub for this, so that is dedication. I want people to know that is how much dedication goes into this.
No, it was just a brilliant night because my wife, Johanna, who doesn't really like football, insisted that she wanted to come and watch this game. And we watched a couple of Welsh mates down there, the pub just down the road. And big shout out to Tommy at the Galway Bay, my mate, who decided to open on a Wednesday night, especially for this. He wouldn't have been open otherwise. But I said, I'll get a few down there. And there was a few down there, and it was just absolutely fantastic, and loved it. And it was just like a proper tournament football game, like Rich said. It just felt like something like, you know, when England played Cameroon in the 1990 World Cup, something like that. That's how it felt to me, and it was just fantastic. Loved it.
Oh, when Bulgaria beat Germany, just a
something like that. Sorry to make the England comparison. But just like a proper tournament football match, you know. That's how it felt.
I agree. Careful, don't drop your cutlery.
I've got to say, it's good this
pasta. good. Oh, you're getting into the Italian spirit of the group as well. Yeah. Again, further dedication to the cause. That performance is made up for the fact that, Gaz, you were the only person to have got my share pun in the last one, which was rankling a bit, if I'm honest. But I'll get it.
Russ, if I could turn back time, I would have totally liked to have run with that, because like Rich, I always believed in this game coming up.
Yeah,
I was going to say that if listeners could hear the appalling activity on the WhatsApp group this morning as everyone attempted to further double down on the share puns, they'd be horrified. But Leon's given them a real taste of it.
Yes,
just there.
No, he's to an aplomb. I sense he's well oiled for this episode. Where to start? I mean, I'm actually disappointed. It's only two, or certainly it was only one until the 95th minute, because we should have been out of sight, a bit like we were in that Russia game. And I know I was just saying off air just a moment ago, that footballing cliche of a 90-minute performance, for most of us, we would have pointed, if we were to think of a 90-minute performance, the Hungary qualifier, admittedly, was a good performance from us. But in terms of a bigger stage, certainly the heat, certainly being outnumbered more or less like 10-1 in the stands in this game, that kind of 90-minute performance, we would say Russia in 2016. But for me, that is a genuinely definitive 90-minute performance, because we were so wasteful and profligate in front of goal, we had to keep going, we had to keep driving on. And on that basis, I think that is just the definitive, as I said, textbook 90-minute performance. And I think as good as we've played in, well, I don't know, Lord knows how long. When the big players stepped up, the little players then, the other end of the spectrum, they just played out of their skin. And I'm thinking of you, Joe Morel, who I thought was absolutely magnificent. Yeah. Danny Ward looks like he just is like, I don't know, out walking the dog. He looks so calm and composed. just brilliant, just brilliant. What else is there to say? Because we've got to probably critique it and analyse it in a little bit more, nuance.
Sure.
And I'm not sure tonight's not a night for nuance.
It's hard to do that because I'm still buzzing, of course. I'm sure we all are. But were you surprised, as I was, that he picked the same team? And I've got to say, right from the off, fair play to Robert Page. He called it because the two changes I would have made would have been Morel and Roberts, and bring in Nico Williams and Ethan Ampadu. I said that on the last pod. Both Morel and Roberts were outstanding tonight. So I'd hold my hands up and say, Robert Page, I'm not going to pick your team for you ever again. I just wonder what your feelings were when you saw the team sheet.
I was surprised a little bit. My changes would have been exactly the changes you said. I think it's a solid. There were solid arguments for bringing Ampadu and Nico Williams in. And even now, even though Connor scored that goal, I still would probably argue that. I would have preferred Nico in there ahead of him. But Joe Morel was fantastic. And I think I'm just really happy for Robert Page because he's not a universally popular manager, especially if you look on Twitter amongst Wales fans, which I think is kind of, I mean, everyone's entitled to have their say on what he does with tactics and stuff. But I kind of felt like people were ready and waiting to turn on him. And he's got his selection spot on. And he's won, and we're going to be going through to the knockout stages. So, yeah, I'm delighted for Robert Page. I mean, I'm not kind of saying this guy is the most revolutionary trainer there's been or that he'll do anything outside of Wales, but he's doing a really good job, and I think he needs credit for that, absolutely. And, you know, like he took Dan James off, and that was the big one that got the criticism last time. Dan James had loads of energy today. So you don't know if he'd have left Dan James on. You don't know how that would have played out for today's game. So that was another one he got right looking back. And I was, I was really, really delighted for Robert Page, like a thoroughly decent guy making tough decisions and he's winning, which is the most important thing.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, Dan James, we really needed, perhaps more so than we did the way the game sort of panned out against Switzerland, we needed his legs to sort of go to 90 minutes. And, you know, I was watching at home with my kids and we were all saying, around about 70, 75, we kind of expected James would probably come off again because he'd looked like he'd run himself into the ground. But then he in the last few minutes, manages to sort of, just as we're coming a bit under the cosh again, he manages to sort of get released down the left-hand side. He takes the ball right down to the corner. That's on, 88, 89 minutes. And, that's right in the sort of depths of the game when, another 20 minutes in the previous game might stop you doing that. You know, you might not get the run on the defender in those situations. So sometimes those decisions are what get you the fine margins. And it showed today that it wasn't so much about the personnel. The same personnel could play a completely different tactical game. You know, you mentioned Russ, sort of Morel and Roberts earlier. They were really kind of important to the way we pressed much higher up the pitch earlier on. You know, and I think that kind of Morel in that role, sort of just behind sort of Ramsey and James and one or two others pressing a bit higher, you know, he's more suited to that than Ampadu is, you know. And I thought getting them playing the way we needed them to play, you know, in a way that we didn't, and we were far too deep against Switzerland, was really, really effective, right, you know, right from the start.
I was happy with Morel starting again. I wasn't overly disappointed with him last time out, to be perfectly honest. But I think, you know, the biggest compliment you can pay him is that it was Joe Allen that was subbed off.
Yeah. That's a really good point, actually.
Not Morel. And I think that in itself is telling. And maybe the challenge back to that is, he's making sure that Allen is, you know, tip-top for Sunday. But we were still only 1-0 up at that point, and my worry was, I think I tweeted something to this effect, was that there was a slight concern that there was a toehold. They were just beginning to get a toehold back a little bit in that game. The only point really in the whole 90 minutes for me that they threatened to maybe just get themselves into that game properly and potentially put us under some difficulties. They had one or two chances, I grant you, but in terms of control. So I was wondering about that, but it's Allen he takes off, and I think that's the biggest compliment that can be paid to Joe Morel, really.
I mean, and also I think that's a compliment to Rob Page, because that is absolutely massive decision. Mm. On S-Pedarek, Gwenan Harris, the co-commentator, who was absolutely superb,
she was
kind of made the call that Ampadu should come on, But I think her kind of idea was maybe to take one of the attackers off just to get more people in the middle. But the idea of getting Ampadu on was spot on, and she was kind of surprised at that, but also able to kind of acknowledge that Paige got it completely, completely right. I mean, if Allen comes off and we concede, everyone will be focusing on the fact that Joe Allen came off because he's like such a controller and stuff. That's another huge tick for Robert Paige. Absolutely.
And worth remembering, like it was easy to forget actually during the game because the amount of running that seemed to be in some of those players who've missed a lot of time, you know, Ramsey, incredible, like didn't stop for the whole game. Allen seemed to have so much fitness for the 70 minutes or so he was on. These are players who've recently back from injury. Ben Davis, similar, you know, that they were able to keep going through that. But Joe Allen has not played a lot of football in the last few months. And the fact that he's able to give us two games so close together and be as competitive in that heat as he was for so long was incredible. And I think, it was more than sensible to make him the man to come off when we needed to freshen things up a bit. And we were in danger of being overrun, like Russ said. We'd had a tough 10 minutes after the penalty miss.
On Joe Morrell, I think it's worth saying his mum Sean is a fan of the podcast, and felt a bit like we were a bit negative about him on the last broadcast. So, Sean, if you listen to this, he was outstanding tonight. Like, take it all back, because I thought probably he would be like one of the obvious ones to maybe drop to freshen things up a bit, but he was absolutely outstanding for a guy who like barely played a game at club level above tier 3 standard. It just like it's extraordinary how well he plays for Wales most of the time. He was absolutely outstanding. I cannot praise him enough.
Do you remember, Leon, you'll remember this quite acutely, I reckon. Do you remember 2006 when Dennis Lawrence had like a phenomenal tournament for Trinidad? And I think he was out of He was at Wrexham at the time,
yeah. But he was maybe about to move to Swansea. Yeah.
But I can remember like him being linked with like Borussia Dortmund or like, I don't know, Kaiserslautern or something. Just like, you know, the German game was like, look at this guy going, wow, this guy can play. And wow, you know, I want Joe Morrell to be linked to, I don't know, like Sevilla or, you know, Atalanta or something. Now that's the only thing that can top tonight. Unfortunately, you know, he's going to play that well, and he's still not the best player on the park, because that was Aaron Ramsey for me. Just perfect. I said, quote unquote, I felt as an attacking threat, and offensively speaking, the game passed him by on Saturday. I mean, the absolute complete opposite this time, and still had the defensive side to his game as well.
That tackle, just outstanding that was. It really was. Like, and he was everywhere. Absolutely brilliant. It was like a Russia performance from Ramsey again. It was vintage Ramsey. Just to take you up on that perfect thing, he should have had a first half hat trick. So I don't think it was perfect, because his finishing wasn't great before the goal, but he really stepped up when he needed to, and it was just sublime. It was vintage Ramsey.
But what a sign of character to have that those two kind of pretty profligate misses in the first half. You know, it'd be easy to look at that as a performance and say, oh, this is a guy who's not quite on it. But the fact that we're still able to talk about him as having basically run that game without, you know, including those two misses, shows how he was able to just dust himself down, carry on. He was leading the press from the start. He was fantastic without the ball. That tackle that you guys were just mentioning, it's a really crucial sort of moment, because Joe Allen's been sort of swamped by about three players when they've started pressing and they're chasing the game. And the ball breaks into a massive amount of space, and you can see him tearing from the right-hand side of the screen as you're watching the TV and win that ball. It was absolutely fantastic. And what a night for him. He was incredible. And there right at the end, as we're playing around with those corners and trying to make sure we sort of see him stoppage time, you know, he's an important part of that as well. Fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, he's just absolutely superb. I mean, and I think, I agree. I mean, he will have expected to have done better with those two opportunities. But it's not even, there's not that many players in his position who would be able to keep on getting into more that same position more than once. I mean, like the timing of the runs, like the understanding with Bale as well, of course. It's just kind of, it's laughable. I saw that he was linked this morning. I mean, probably just BBC gossip kind of paper talk, but linked with teams like Crystal Palace and West Ham. I mean, that I don't think so. that's outrageous. This is like an absolutely brilliant, brilliant footballer that is one of the all-time greats of our nation and could play for any team. He's absolutely superb, fitness permitting.
People love to write those top players off, though, don't they? It always kind of comes back to looking nonsense. I mean, I was driving home before the game today and listening to Radio Wales, and they, you know, I forget who it was, whether it was Kevin Ratcliffe or one of the others, was talking about how it was now reasonable to make the case that sort of Brooks and James were both ahead of Gareth Bale. And I just think, I can see why they say that, but your star performers, the people who've done it time and time again, who are big game players, who know what it means to sort of play for massive clubs like Juventus and Real Madrid, they turn up on the day. You know, it's not a coincidence or some kind of, out of current form fluke that Gareth Bale plays in all three of those balls that Aaron Ramsey runs on. So it's not a coincidence that Aaron Ramsey is on the end of those because he can time a brilliant run. These are class players with great experience. And, you know, the idea somehow that these are players who are, or Aaron Ramsey's going to, you know, end up at Crystal Palace, or Gareth Bale is finished and should be on the substitutes bench, you know, it's bordering on ridiculous, some of the things you hear about them.
Yeah, I mean, they were two superb assists as well for Bale. I think, like,
weren't they?
Difficult with the penalty, and that was a bit of a shock, but both brilliant assists, elite level.
Yeah, exactly right. Same thing as we were saying about Ramsey and those misses. Bale misses a penalty, and you can see it was kind of affecting him for a few minutes, yet there he is still, you know, at the end of the game, seeing it out, making sure we win. You know, it's a big time mentality, that is, and that makes the difference.
And for the first of those two corners at the end, you think this is just going to be a bit of rope-a-dope now, isn't it? In the corner, they're just going to grind out the last couple of seconds. Oh my god, he's just turned him, and he's oh my god! And I thought that was in, and you just think, well now they'll do it, and then he's like, just it's like the double, but and then they go, I'm going to triple bluff you, and does it again and then sets up a goal. You just think that is just a massive, massive personality, and just that's good players don't do that. Average players certainly don't. Great players go, yeah, do you know what, let's have another crack at it, and just to keep going, because as you say, Rich, it was a shock that, well, not only was it a shock, the penalty miss, it was a shocking penalty miss, and and he knows it as well, and just is just able to put it behind him. Most players can't, can they? We know that. History tells us that a lot of players, that just eats away at them for the remainder of however many minutes were left on the clock, and they disappear, and he didn't. Huge, huge performance from him as well. And, I was pleased as well, because you can imagine social media, not that I was particularly watching it, and I wouldn't care much for what they were saying anyway, but you can imagine the number of people that would have been absolutely hammering him for that penalty miss. All credit to him. I mean, they all deserve a shout-out, but is there anything else that's just kind of top-notch? I thought Kiefer did really, really well. I thought the battle between him and... That was a real tussle as well. And I get the impression, I didn't see it, but I get the impression they both went up to another end and went, oh, fair play. Good game, hard game.
Yeah.
Not necessarily 100% fair all the time, but then, you know, that's what it's like. That was a great tussle.
We've talked about sort of Kiefer Moore's, like... you know, the danger that he's going to pick up bookings the whole time because of the sort of nature of his game. And I thought the referee was really good and probably suited us today. Well, except for the obvious booking on the foul and Dan James in the first half. But Kiefer Moore was physical. He sort of won challenges, but he wasn't... he never seemed in danger of giving away too many free kicks or too many fouls or a yellow card, which was kind of pleasing to see, given he's already on a yellow card from the last game. And actually, arguably, we could have had a bit more out of the referee for the way Kiefer Moore is treated. So he really does seem to have adapted to international football, certainly in certain games with the right referee. And I think that talk that was being entertained before the tournament of false nine, and particularly Ramsey in a false nine, I think that must be well and truly put to bed now. There's no way that without Kiefer Moore on the pitch, I don't think, that Ramsey makes those untracked runs into the box for Bale's passes. You know, you need someone like Kiefer Moore to give the defenders something else to think about. I think Ramsey would be so much less effective if there wasn't Moore also there as the focal point of that attack, and it showed today.
Yeah, I think I was almost surprised that he headed that first half chance over, because you're sort of used to him really planting those headers, and sort of what we've seen from him so far for Wales is just that he gets good direction on them. So that was just a little something where I thought maybe he could have done better, but he was really you know, outstanding again in terms of his putting himself about and just and you know, just, you know, one or two things didn't come off for him, but he was just, he was an integral part of the way we played, and as a team we were outstanding, and I think we've got to give credit to our defence really as well. That's the thing, you know, Meppham stood up, he looked more confident. Roden is a battle for him against you know, a tough striker in Lille striker. He's just, I mean, he's just won Ligue 1 in France, you know, he's good player.
Yilmaz.
Yilmaz, yeah, sorry. We stood up to him well, you know, really well. I mean, I felt he was kind of isolated. I mean, that's Turkey's problem, not ours. They got it wrong tactically. But still, you know, you're up against a kind of, you know, top striker who's just one of the top leagues in Europe, and you got to stand up. And Meppham and Roden did that. Ben Davis, fantastic. Conor Roberts, delighted for him to get his goal at the end there. Danny Ward again just looks like a proper full-time footballer, doesn't he? Outstanding. I really can't praise him enough. It's brilliant, and I'm buzzing.
I believe Danny Ward's updated his LinkedIn to that effect as well. So yeah, we can confirm that now. It's now official. Yeah.
Full-time footballer.
I cannot believe that Leicester will not be getting offers for Danny Ward now. I mean, I don't know what on earth he would have to do to prove. Or to kind of suggest that he'd be an attractive proposition for another club. He surely can't accept being a second choice indefinitely now that he's showing, like, the footballing world how good he is. I'd hope not.
You'd
anyway.
Hope, yeah, exactly. You'd hope, but I mean, football it can be strange like that, can't it? Do you remember how disappointed we were that when Alan went to Stoke and when Robson Kane went to West Brom? It's not rational. It's not a rational thing, is it? Where players end up and what fees they go for and what wages they negotiate, right, and all the rest of it. And some,
but they got moved stuff.
Well, so. Yeah.
It's rational in the sense that unless a sort of middling to lower end Premier League team, you know, feels really confident they want to make him their first choice, then some goalkeepers do make the choice that, well, I'm going to make an awful lot more money sat on the bench at Leicester than I am in any championship, first choice for any championship club. And in a short career, I guess sometimes, you know, we could say that Wayne Hennessy's done something similar at the latter end of his career. And I suppose Danny Ward may now well look at it and think, well, sat on the bench for Leicester, I've still managed to make myself, you know, the Welsh first choice keeper in a tournament. Yeah. You know, maybe it takes away his incentive to move in a weird way.
It just has to be the club that wants making number one, and before that falls into place. Hopefully for him it does. He would deserve it.
You know, you just think back to, say, for example, when James Chester moved to West Brom, a move can backfire as well, clearly. And, or at the very least, it doesn't allow a player to kick on, or it doesn't allow a player to fully demonstrate what they can do. You know, I remember you saying this years ago, guys. It doesn't matter that Joe Allen is at Stoke. Let's get over that, because if this is how he keeps playing for Wales, then it doesn't matter, which ultimately is probably all that matters, really, for us. Yes, it would be nice if he's at a top club. Yes, it would be nice if he came back to Swansea, whatever the people's preferences are. Yes, it would be nice if Danny Ward was playing week in, week out in the Premier League or at the top end of the Championship. But if bench warming, he's still able to pull off these performances, and don't forget the ones, you know, in the run up to the tournament as well, then yeah, fine. You know, it'll be what it is, I suppose.
Of all our squad, he's the player who it matters least if he's not playing regular first team football. You know, we'd love them all to be playing regular first team football at the highest level possible, but it's less important for him than any other player in our squad.
Rich, how are Italy doing? It seems to be just on the BBC. I'm not watching it on the website. They're dominating, yeah.
Yeah, they're dominating. 1-0 up, dominating. Looking really good.
Chiellini's hamstring's gone, by all accounts.
Ah, okay. Well,
he's gone off. You might have missed that, but yeah, he went off on 24 minutes. It says apparently with a hamstring problem, so he's obviously not fancying defending against Kiefer Moore. Clearly, he's getting his excuses in early. How do we want this game, by the way, to go? Do we want Italy to dominate it, and then it's just a question of coasting through the final fixture against us, or do we want Switzerland to peg them back a bit?
Well, I would say I would want Italy, I mean, to hammer them. Just, I mean, from like the goal difference point of view, I guess.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, that's how I see it as well. I just think, you know, I think Italy were always going to be favourites to win this group, and know, hope they run away with it and we become then favourites for second place in the group.
Second place is a nice draw in it. It's the runners up in the Belgium group, Finland, Denmark, or Russia. And I think it's a second round game. That's not too bad, is it? And I think if Italy were to give Switzerland a good beating tonight, that allows us to feel like, well, even if a narrow defeat to Italy is probably a good enough then for second place, unless Switzerland really batter Turkey, which I don't know. I'm not sure I fancy them. I'm not sure I fancy that Switzerland team, decent as they were against us, to win by several goals. Although Turkey, I guess, will be out of it. So, well, no, actually, they'll be playing for one of the third place spots, won't they? So, you know, they'll have everything to go for as well, even in their last game.
And they came into the tournament both scoring and conceding a lot and had some impressive results along the way. Yeah. So what would the odds have been on them not scoring at all in the group games? So you can maybe see in them, you know, getting, if they can get an early one against Switzerland, then it throws that fixture kind of wide open. But yeah, I mean, Finland, see, that's a funny group because, of course, of what happened to Eriksson, isn't it, in terms of the, you know, where the heads are at of the Danish players. And you know, Finland won, but now they've lost the second game. Russia didn't really think much of them at all against Belgium, but then, you know, to be fair, they probably got closer to them than most other teams tend to. So yeah, it's a funny one, really, that group. It's not sure who to pick. We didn't really threaten them, I didn't think, when we had them in the Nations League that time. We had moments, we had spells, but I don't think we ever really threatened to win either of those games, is my memory, which I don't know, might be wrong. But where are they going to be at as the tournament carries on and with everything that's gone on with them? It's a funny group, that one.
Probably Denmark, I would least like to out of those three teams, but any of those three, I'd be, that's a really, really good fixture to get in a knockout stage, I think, for us. We're more than capable of beating any of them. If anyone, even if you don't speak Welsh, I just have to just keep on telling people how incredibly good the coverage on Es Pedwar Ec is. It's absolutely superb. And tonight we witnessed OTJ interview Ben Davis right after the match. I've never, ever seen Ben Davis so pumped and excited and just incredibly passionate and into what he was doing and into the moment. And loving life. It was an absolute joy to see. And on like a broader thing, like the level of analysis, and Malcolm Allen is one of the great characters of Welsh football, period, of all time. Just wholeheartedly, Es Pedwar Ec, just stick the subtitles on if you're not a speaker. It's wonderful. And that Ben Davis interview, to me, is like already an iconic moment of Welsh football history at tournaments. Unreal.
And to paraphrase, he's basically saying, that performance has been coming. We knew we could do that, but actually, we know there's more. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's so empowering. And like I said to you earlier, I was expecting to rip his shirt off, like the Hulk or something, or Superman, just to kind of, and, you know, is it Billy? It's Billy, isn't it? I was trying to wrap my brain. Is it Billy in Predator, isn't it? When he stops on the bridge, and he kind of cuts down his chest, doesn't he? That's what I was expecting off Ben Davis. Although somebody else did say, and I forget who, sorry, said that he appears to be turning into a farmer from Tregaron. That's not a vibe I'm necessarily familiar with, I'll confess, but I will go with that one as well. But yeah, so it's either a Tregaron farmer or Billy about to meet his maker in Predator. But yeah, it was. That was just mega. Absolutely loved that.
Yeah, I was watching on Irish TV, so it was a bit more dispassionate. It was Ray Houghton doing a co-commentary. It's very good, actually. But it's quite interesting just to kind of, you know, they were sort of leaning to more towards the Welsh side because they're more familiar with our players than theirs. But it was like that sort of thing of not being completely caught up, and but not being sort of that English BBC ITV thing of just like everything being through the prism of England. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Ray Houghton's co-commentary, actually. If you get a chance to watch that, if you don't speak Welsh, I'd recommend that rather than the English commentary.
How do you think we approach the Italy game now? I mean, do we make changes? I guess you could sort of look at it as we've got a great chance now, almost certainly through. It's a chance to rest players. It's a chance to stick with what we've got. Or do we give ourselves the best chance of beating Italy, you know, if this is the team that's going to keep improving and is now our first choice. I mean, is it worth making changes to sort of avoid players being too knackered by the second round?
Now, I mean, Robert Page has got an awful chance of getting trying to persuade Aaron Ramsey to rest after that performance, and given that it's Italy up next. I think there is something in that. I mean, I suppose to a certain extent, well, this game is still playing out, the Italy-Switzerland game. If there's something riding on it for Italy, then you don't want to weaken the team too much. If they're coasting after the end of this fixture, then, you know, maybe there's a margin for one or two. I'm just calling up the yellow cards as well. So Moore, Ben Davis and Meppham have both picked up a card. That's something to bear in mind as well. But then, you know, do you get the suspension out early? I mean, that would be the Sergio Ramos philosophy with these things, wouldn't it?
I wasn't sure about that. And in terms of the selection, I would say absolutely do not rest anyone. Gaz is right. Or was it Russ who said Ramsey and Bale are just not going to accept that? Because you come to like a big tournament to play the biggest and the best teams and to try and beat them. Italy will be big favourites. That's not to say we can't have an iconic and incredible game and beat them. What I would say is it's a game maybe where if it gets to like 70 minutes and we're 2-0 down, maybe you can start thinking about rotating some of the players then. But I would absolutely not rest anyone. I'd pick Nico ahead of Connor. I'm not going to change on that. But I would stick with Joe Morel. That I would say that. And I'm a huge Ampadu fan, but I would stick with Joe Morel. And I'd also say to his mum, tell your son to get a new agent or make sure his agent is working incredibly hard to get him a proper football club.
I can see sort of Nico coming in for Connor on the basis of just trying to keep the squad fresh and to give him a bit of a rest. But again, you know, he's just scored. You know, you can't imagine any of them wanting to stand down after that performance. But it'll be interesting to see what he does. It was just a massive sort of statement of self-belief on behalf of the team. Well, and the squad more widely, of course, but on behalf of the team. You just saw that at the end as well. I don't know if you hung around the footage after the coverage after the game. You know, pretty much like every member of the squad and backroom team form this massive kind of huddle. Bale's in the middle. There's a bit of pointing at the chest and a bit of kind of grabbing the crest and all that kind of thing. And it's this togetherness. It seems to be exactly the same as last time round. That self belief, and it comes back to saying that interview that Ben did at the end. That sense that, do you know what, they think this is just another step up and that there's other rungs on the ladder for them to take. I think that's just, you know, incredibly promising, really.
I think the game tonight has shown us that any improvements that we might still be able to affect in our performances are not now going to be about personnel. We might do it to freshen up. We might do it to sort of maybe make a tactical shift based on what we see about Italy. But really, the kind of one obvious area of, you know, for improvement is organisational anyway. It's about how we're defending set pieces, corners especially. And it does still maybe remain a bit of a concern how often the opposition get themselves to a cross from a corner before our players do. You know, I don't know whether we have the wrong people picking up things or they're able to get a, you know, clear read from watching the way we behave at corners. But that was really the only times I thought we really felt threatened by Turkey, when they had a run of two or three corners at a time or two or three crosses into the box. You know, by and large, we dealt with them fine, but that's the big, surely, training ground area to work on ready for Sunday.
To sort of sum up, I just think, Rich was maybe saying at the beginning, it's just one of the great, great nights of in Welsh football history, and we'll be looking back at this in years to come, considering, you know, that the heat, considering the stick that has sort of come the way of the players and the manager and stuff since that performance against Switzerland and the Turkish fans in the stadium sort of made it a bit of a home game, and our big players have been sort of criticised a little bit. It was just fantastic, fantastic evening. Really brilliant. I loved it, and we'll be talking about this game in years to come.
And I think other countries' fans will be talking about it as possibly the game of the tournament so far. Italy were impressive. I mean, from a purist point of view, I suppose there's something in that. But in terms of just, you know, a sheer kind of performance and, you know, end to end as well. Turkey, yeah, as you said, had one or two chances. The neutral will have enjoyed that as well and probably be purring about it, like you said at the start.
It's one of the great, great nights that we're going to remember for a long, long time. And I think I was thinking after the game, I can't think of a win quite like it. You know, it's sort of got that level of impact a bit like Belgium and a couple of other wins from the last tournament. But, you know, you made a really good comparison at the start, Russ, about games where we cruised a bit more, like the Russia game. It wasn't like that. We had to be really switched on in the context of hot weather, loads of the Turkish fans there. You know, it felt really like an away game, and that's going to go down as one of the big characterful performances in the history of Welsh football, most definitely.
It's a massive marker down as well for the tournament. Other countries sit up and they do notice these things as well. And whoever we meet in the second round will probably, that's the game they'll go and want to analyse first. That's the champagne performance to date. Where's Rich gone? He's
disappeared. Right. So he just burst with excitement, maybe.
He's on the WhatsApp group asking what's going on. Has everyone gone?
Oh, hi, guys.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, hey. Did everyone cut out then? I thought it was just... I was like, oh, I've been talking for so long.
No, we were still here. We were still here. It was... I don't know, I just thought you'd kind of gone for a run outside because you just were so excited.
I feel like I could. I've only got so much energy to burn from that win, honestly. I had a massive like gym session this afternoon.
Not going to sleep tonight. Wow. Okay. So yeah, onwards to Sunday and Father's Day as well. So I hope you guys all get a day off, get to put your feet up and prepare, and to get all zen like about the Italy game.
Of course, we can be zen like. We can afford to be zen like about it because we're virtually guaranteed to be through. So it's great. It's a great position to be in.
And I've seen a couple of pictures of Brian Flynn out there as well. So maybe he's the lucky mascot, the lucky charm.
Yeah, we should have had him out in Lyon for the semi final 5 years ago, and that would change things a bit. Also, I've got to say, we would not have won that game in grey. Thank fuck we played in yellow and green. So that's something that's been put right since the last tournament as well.
Yeah. Still unbeaten in major tournaments while wearing yellow as well. Albeit played 2-1-2, but, you know, still.
When do we play yellow before?
So we played the very first game in the 58 World Cup. It was against Hungary, and they were red, and so we wore yellow, but with a big kind of postcardy red crest kind of just kind of sewn on top. Mel Charles's shirt from that game is at the museum in Wrexham.
Right, okay, wow. So the only game we've ever lost in red at a major tournament was against Brazil in the quarterfinal in 58.
Because we wore grey, yeah.
We wore grey against England, we wore grey against Portugal 5 years ago. Yeah.
Only Pelé can defeat us at tournaments in red.
Yeah, fair play.
So yeah, I had a text off a mate during the game who was a Southampton fan, and he said that Keith Moore reminded him of Graziano Pelé. And I had to just text back, there's one too many L's in that surname for the comparison. Such is the levels of hyperbole that we will continue, I'm sure, for the next couple of days to attain. Gents, really grateful for making time available when you should all be getting drunk or whatever. And we'll do it all again in a couple of days. Hits up.